Welcome back to Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB. The show continues, as do the technical difficulties today. And that is all right, because we're going to keep the football conversation going before we get to some Royals postgame sounds from their tough loss last night. Just one run. They lost 3-2 to the White Sox, looking to bounce back tonight. So we will hear some postgame sound from that game later on in the hour. But first, some fantasy football talk. I got a chance to catch up with Ben Heisler of SI Gambling and SI Fantasy this week to talk about the COVID-19 implications on fantasy football. So we get into some of that. He's got some of his sleepers, some of his overrated players, and just a lot of great insight from him. I know myself included, a lot of people who listen to this show and listen to this station, very involved in fantasy sports in general. But fantasy football one coming up, and depending on how early you draft, that could kind of be tough if you're looking at, you know, the deadline's August 4th with the opt-out, injuries, COVID-19 positive tests. I mean, it's not just a matter of, hey, you're hoping that your roster stays healthy this year. It's a matter of, okay, are they healthy physically, you know, from an injury standpoint, as well as are they not coming down with COVID-19 and going to be out?
Well, I've never understood why people draft early for fantasy football
I don't either.
Because I'm like, why wouldn't
you want to draft as late as you possibly can?
We try to draft by the last preseason game that weekend.
Yeah.
Like, the preseason game is over. I'm like, okay, cool. Let's draft our team going. Because, like, you got 4 weeks usually, which the preseason is too entirely long anyway. But you get 4 weeks. You're like, anything can happen in a whole month. Like, you have no idea. What if that guy breaks a leg or something? Like,
yeah.
I remember 1 year I drafted Jamal Charles.
Ooh.
It was amazing. He had been killing it. Tears his ACL the very first game. Or it was the first actual regular season game, but still. It was ruined my whole season.
Well, and this year, again, not just injuries, but with COVID, like, you're going to have to be checking your, like, your lineup for up to, like, the second that you can, like, make any final changes.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to have to be tuned in, because I feel like we're just going to be up against some really I'm very curious, because the NFL has been very methodical in their news releases before games. You know, you have a certain time before, like, I want to say it's about, what, 2 hours, hour and a half before the game, maybe an hour, that they release, you know, the injury report and who's out, who's, you know, who can play, whatever. And, you know, you're tracking that all week long with practices and the injury reports coming out then. But I mean, I think that a lot of this is going to be just up against the clock, and you might see players getting pulled at, you know, at the last minute. And that could even go for players who haven't tested positive and might just be exhibiting symptoms. It might get pulled at the last minute because the risk is too high to let anyone play if there's any chance that they have COVID-19. So here's my conversation with Ben Heisler of SI Fantasy and SI Gambling. A lot of great insight from him if you are a fantasy football fan.
Let's start with what your role is at Sports Illustrated and what you do there.
My role is about 1,000 pages long, it feels like, but I've really enjoyed it. I've started there since the end of May. I'm running a lot of the different things on the fantasy side and on the gambling side. And I think if anybody's listening that's saying, well, how are those two related? They're related in more ways than you think. So much, especially when you're playing daily fantasy, is all about determining where a lot of the different numbers are coming from, where you're going to strategize to try and determine what lineups you want to go with. If you're going to be stacking teams, what teams has had a solid over-under total, which teams are being steamed in the right direction from Vegas. So these are all different ways that are being paired together. And it's nice to sort of be at the intersection of both sports betting and sports fantasy. So I do a variety of roles, host a lot of videos, podcasts. I'm an analyst for SI's fantasy coverage for football, for baseball. And on the gambling side, it's trying to determine sort of the best plays of the day and sort of see where a lot of the movement and the sharp action is going.
Well, let's focus on NFL, because this show is NFL Live, Casey, and we're going to do a lot of Chiefs and NFL talk throughout this segment here. But I think one of the biggest questions ahead of the 2020 season is just how much the coronavirus could change fantasy football and sports betting. What can you tell us about all of the uncertainty ahead with this novel virus?
I think we're starting to see it already, right? Think about how the first cases broke out in Miami with the Marlins just a few days ago on Sunday. They had, you know, maybe 3-4 diagnosed cases, and the Marlins had to come up with an evaluation based on what baseball decided that they should do. And they said, well, we're still going to play, and we're going to try and get those other guys out of there. Now the Marlins have 17 confirmed cases of coronavirus, and you're already starting to see that their entire week has been postponed of the MLB schedule. And that's going to affect the other teams that are involved as well. Now you have football where you have guys just breathing right on top of each other. And you're going to see situations where it's going to spread very, very quickly. I don't know how, Allie, they're going to be able to find a way to pull this off unless they come to a last minute bubble type of agreement where they play in a couple of the different stadiums in maybe Los Angeles, or then bring the San Diego stadium back as well and try to figure out maybe something to do in an area where they can actually isolate themselves. But I think you're starting to see a little bit of what that initial inclination might look like and how it's going to work. And especially from the betting side and from the fantasy side, I think more than ever, it is going to be critical to follow for last minute breaking news. You're going to have situations where, let's say you draft Ezekiel Elliott with the number 4 overall pick in the first round, reliable, consistent back, someone that's been there for the last several years that you can know you can plug and play. What if Ezekiel Elliott tests positive for Corona? It could happen by not necessarily any fault of his own. So having depth in your fantasy teams is important. Following beat writers, you can get that little bell on Twitter that tells you when somebody has some breaking news. Adam Schefter from ESPN. All those guys are going to be so important to follow and make sure that you're on top of it so that you can make moves and adapt. You can't just set it and forget it this year with your fantasy teams.
That is such a good point. I mean, I feel like everyone already is so plugged in, but more so than ever before, it's going to be crucial for how your team performs, because if a player is unavailable, then I mean, it just is going to shake everything up. And I have no idea what that is going to look like exactly yet. But when it comes to the players opting out, I mean, how does that change how the boards are playing out? There haven't been any high profile players yet to opt out, but how do you see that potentially changing the landscape here in the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think maybe one key offensive player has been Brandon Bolden with the Patriots, who saw his role get elevated probably to like the number 3 running back. But again, it's the Patriots. So they have 1,000 different guys in that role anyway. You know, there's been some potential early reports that Nick Foles of the Chicago Bears might consider opting out. His wife is autoimmune compromised. Certainly that's something that, you know, I'm very aware of, you know, over at home, knowing sort of what the coronavirus can do. But I just think it's another one of those situations, Allie, where you're going to see a lot of bench players, guys that maybe we would consider as sort of a late round flyer in like the 14th or your 15th round of your fantasy leagues, or maybe just the players that are hanging on to the waiver wire, where you normally wouldn't have much use for them, but they could get thrust into a starting role from the very beginning. So it is going to be essential to watch where a lot of these opt-outs are coming in, because I think players have until beginning of August to make that determination. So I would probably wait until the opt-outs come in before I'm drafting in a league, but for anybody that's drafting earlier, definitely something to pay attention to.
That's so interesting. And that's such a good point too, with diversifying from the teams that you're even picking and having players make up your roster, because like you said, an outbreak could happen. But let's get into the Chiefs, because people in Kansas City, I'm sure, will be looking to add value with some of the Kansas City players, and starting with some of the skill position players like Tyreek, Travis Kelce, Mecole Hardman. Where do they stack up right now compared to other players in their position across the league?
Definitely. So let's start with the man, the $500 million man in Pat Mahomes. Although I don't know if you necessarily wanted to go there, but we can start with him anyway. He's the number one quarterback off the board for me. And normally in fantasy leagues, I try to wait on quarterbacks, because if you look at the actual point value at the position, there's not much of a difference between quarterback 3 and quarterback 11 most of the time. Now, the last 2 years, Mahomes has blown that out of the water. Same thing with Lamar Jackson a season ago. They just completely obliterated where the usual projections are. So I think Mahomes and then Lamar Jackson for me, and then Dak Prescott round out that 1-2. But there's such a gap, Allie, between Lamar and Dak, upwards of maybe 2.5 rounds when it comes to your average draft position. So I think Mahomes, if you want to take him maybe in the mid to late third round, that's probably fair value. The thing is, in Kansas City, most likely he'll be gone by then, so you probably have to reach for them. Other skill positions, Tyreek Hill. I think a lot of fantasy players might be feeling a little bit burned by him based on the injuries a season ago. That's not really fair. Yeah. Based on that offense, though, you can make a legitimate argument that after Michael Thomas with the Saints, after Devontae Adams with the Packers, he's in that conversation for the number 3, number 4 wide receiver off the board. And That's among the mix of DeAndre Hopkins and Julio Jones. He's not going to get the amount of targets that those guys do just because the Chiefs spread it around, but he's the clear-cut number one receiving option in this offense, and it's the best offense in the league. So I think you can make an argument that based on efficiency alone, Tyreek Hill belongs in the conversation, and I think he's a very valuable first-round pick. Travis Kelce, probably my number two tight end off the board, and a lot of people might say, well, He's been the number one tight end the last 3 years. What's changed? He still has Mahomes, likely back for a full 16 games. I give the slight edge to George Kittle because he's a little bit younger. Kelce hasn't hit any sort of injury concerns yet. He's starting to approach the wrong side of 30. And I just think Kittle is going to, I was going to say I'm on the wrong side of 30 now, so who am I to talk? But George Kittle, I think, is going to see much more volume this year. The 49ers are going to have to pass more. Their defense is going to take a step back. We saw the regression happen with the Bears a couple seasons ago. I think you're going to see the same thing with the 49ers this year. And I think that just elevates Kittle because there's no other weapons around him that match up to what Kansas City has. So Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, still upward top tier targets, but I like Hill just a little bit more than Kelce this year.
And then Mecole Hardman, the rookie who had a great season last year despite having a limited number of snaps. Where do you envision him coming into play this season and what his draft value is?
He's so hard to project, Allie, because the efficiency numbers were off the chain. It was part of the reason for the first few years that I faded Tyreek Hill. Now, I look like an idiot because of it, but I always thought, okay, I want my wide receivers to get a ton of volume, especially if you're playing, you know, in a points per reception, a PPR league. You want those guys just to get fed the football as much as humanly possible. And then you had Tyreek, who was just changing the dynamic of how he was going after the deep ball, how he was continuing to have maximum yards after the catch. And it completely changed the way that we looked at him as a part of that conversation. You know, with Mecole Hardman, he's only going to see the field about maybe 40, 50% of the snaps. DeMarcus Robinson actually is on the field more often than Mecole Hardman. The difference is that when Mecole is on the field, he's able to get in a few different targets. He's able to maximize his efficiency. So I think he's worth a flyer. You know, if you're looking for high upside wide receivers, especially if Watkins or Tyreek Hill go down, then all of a sudden Mecole Hardman gets inserted in and he becomes a dynamic factor. He's probably not going until the 11th, 12th round in most fantasy drafts. I think that's probably the likely place for him. And again, too, this is a position with so much depth at the wide receiver spot that I don't think you necessarily need to reach on somebody like Mecole Hardman unless you believe that it's just going to line up well for him just because of how other injury concerns can happen in the NFL.
Ben, another thing I think is interesting with fantasy drafts each year is overvalued players versus sleepers. So who's your biggest sleeper and most overrated, overhyped player for fantasy this year?
We'll start with the overvalued guy. I have some major concerns this year when it comes to Austin Eckler. I'm a big Austin Eckler fan with the Chargers. I think his skill set is dynamic in this league. He caught, I think, 94 passes a season ago. But it also came from Phillip Rivers, who was one of the best at checking down to running backs in the league. And with Tyrod Taylor, I just don't know if that's going to happen as much this year. Austin Eckler is going upwards in the end of the first round, early second round. And I do have some concerns as to whether or not he's going to live up to that type of value. If we're looking for a couple guys to bounce back at the running back spot, as far as sleepers go, James Conner with Pittsburgh is really intriguing to me. He's going off the board as the running back 22 on the board for a guy that gets a ton of volume in Pittsburgh's offense. Mike Tomlin has said they like running backs to get three down work. And the guys that are going around them, Raheem Mostert, David Johnson, Melvin Gordon, Jonathan Taylor, who may not be the starter in Indianapolis, those guys aren't going to be the number one starters, and James Conner is. So if he can stay healthy, he has running back one upside, which is, you know, running back one through running back 12. One other guy really quickly, Darius Geis with the Washington football team. He's somebody that has not been able to stay on the field, and injuries have just been really costly to him. But Ron Rivera is their new head coach. Christian McCaffrey just played in that offense the last several years, and they've even noticed some similar comparisons within his ability to break tackles and catch the ball out of the backfield. If you get Darius Geis right now, you can get him in the 7th or 8th round. He has running back one upside. That's where they drafted him. And so if you can go ahead and take a flyer on somebody like that, assuming he stays healthy, assuming with his ability to catch passes, I think that's really exceptional value.
A lot of great insight here. I will definitely be going back and listening to this, taking notes when I'm putting together my fantasy team. The Chiefs' defense really surprised people last season and seemed to get better as the weeks went on. When you look at the Chiefs' defense, how do they stack up against the rest of the league? And now that defensive coordinator Steve Spagnuolo is going into his second year with the team.
They were terrific down the stretch of the season, and I don't think a lot of people give them credit. I think they look at the overall body of work and say, oh, this is probably, you know, a top 6 to 10 defense, when I think they have the ability to be top 5. It's just, again, going to be dependent on their injury situation. Chris Jones coming back is such a big move for them. To be able to have him and Frank Clark as part of that 4-3 defense is really intriguing. You still have Tyrann Mathieu making plays in the backfield as well. I'm excited about where they rank, because I actually think there's good value on them. Right now, the Chiefs are coming in as the fantasy, fantasy 8 defense off the board. They're going just ahead of Denver and just before the New Orleans Saints. Now, typically, I like to change out defenses every week. I like to play the matchups, but a lot of people like, all right, I want to get my stud defense. I want to get the Chiefs. I want to get the Ravens or the Steelers or the 49ers. And again, that's perfectly fine. But, you know, with Kansas City, I think a lot of people are going to sleep on them because they're going to see some of those bad numbers from the first part of the season and know that they have a terrific pass rush, know that they have the ability to force turnovers, get some big interceptions. You know, somebody like Tyrann Mathieu makes such a big difference when it comes to adding up fantasy points on the defensive side. So I probably won't draft the Chiefs defense. I'm usually not spending a lot of draft capital with defenses or kickers for that matter, but I totally understand why somebody would, because I think they have a chance, even though they're being drafted in the top 10, to be a top 5 fantasy defense this year.
Okay, speaking of kickers before we move on, Harrison Butker has really moved his way into potentially being one of the best in the league at his position. Where does he stack up? And you said you don't spend a lot of draft capital there, but for someone who might, how is Harrison Butker as a pick?
He's the number one pick off the board with this type of offense. I think, you know, maybe you can make an argument for Justin Tucker of the Baltimore Ravens. Both the Chiefs and the Ravens offense are going to be awesome this year. And they're both terrific, accurate kickers with a lot of range as well. So you can flip-flop between Butker and Justin Tucker. Will Lutz of the New Orleans Saints is probably number 3 on that list. And then after that, it's just a complete and total toss-up. So if you want to spend a little early capital on Harrison Buttkicker on buttkicker.com, you know, I probably wouldn't advise it, but I would also understand it just because he's been a stud.
Yeah, no, you can't deny his impact on the field, but I'm with you. Maybe not the best advice to go early, but if in your draft he's there, might not be a bad pickup. We are visiting with Ben Heisler of Sports Illustrated for our Miller Lite feature of the show here tonight. And now I want to get your thoughts on a storyline that's really piqued your interest as it relates to fantasy football, because there have been some crazy moves. I mean, Cam Newton to the Patriots, and that's just one of many others. What storyline are you following, especially as it relates to fantasy drafts?
Well, besides the ones that we talked about of who's deciding to be opting out, you know, where exactly a lot of these waiver wire pickups are going to come on, I think the quarterback position is probably where I'm focused on the most. You brought up Cam Newton. That's a fascinating angle. Cam Newton in 2018 was on pace to be the number 4 fantasy quarterback in the league, and then he got hurt. The shoulder went completely haywire, and he couldn't complete a pass. They ended up sitting him for the rest of the year, and we saw what happened last year. What type of Cam are we going to get in New England? Are they going to maximize his strengths? Are they going to allow him to run? You know, part of what made Cam so special and to rack up fantasy points was he was somebody that could extend plays, be able to get touchdowns in the red zone, get an extra 6 points as a running touchdown instead of 4 points as a passing touchdown. So I'm fascinated to see what Cam Newton in New England is going to look like. I don't think they're the weapons around him are necessarily that great. Julian Edelman is 1,000 years old and their running game isn't particularly intriguing, but he has back end quarterback one upside in New England. It'll just be a question of whether or not the weapons around him will be enough and whether or not he's truly healthy. And then I want to know whether or not Lamar Jackson can do it again. I am on team Lamar, Alley, because I think that skill set in that offense with Greg Roman is special. He has a ton of confidence. He has really good receivers and Mark Andrews and Marquise Brown around him. There's a ton of versatility. They have incorporated a really good running game. They drafted J.K. Dobbins out of Ohio State, who I think has an opportunity to be a stud with Mark Ingram in the backfield this year. Their offense runs really well through him, but he was also insanely efficient last year. And I don't know whether or not that's going to be the case. I don't know whether or not his body will be able to hold up from all those hits. So I'm buying on him, but I need to make sure that he can do it for another consecutive year. And I think a lot of the public is curious to find that out as well. So quarterbacks, 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 those will be the big opportunities. And one more, I think Kyler Murray in year number two with the big trade of DeAndre Hopkins now in Arizona. Cardinals are kind of a sneaky team, especially with the Rams after a lot of their spotlight in LA has started to move down the side a little bit. So I think Arizona has a chance to make a little bit of noise if their defense can improve. But Kyler Murray, we've seen the last 2 years, second-year quarterbacks win the MVP. Pat Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, and now Kyler Murray might be a sneaky MVP candidate here in 2020.
When we look at how the coronavirus pandemic is going to impact the gambling world, which I'll be honest, I don't know too much about, what can you tell us about what is going to occur this season and maybe how that will impact the next couple of years to come?
It's going to be fascinating. And especially, I think you're going to see two waves when it comes from a sports betting perspective. You know, most of the lines, let's, you know, keep it in the NFL. Most of the early lines are coming out Sunday night from the sports books once most of the games are done. You know, the Westgate out in Las Vegas is one of those sports books that really tries to get the lines out early. I think you're going to see it in two different ways. You're going to see a lot of sharp bettors attack a line early the way that they typically do, because that's how the line tends to move. It's where the money comes in. It's not necessarily the amount of bets that come in. It's where the money goes. Follow the money, and that likely leads you into determining where the proper line should be. I think you're still going to see that from a lot of sharp bettors. Now, I also believe you are going to see Vegas probably have to take some games off the board, especially as more information comes out. Let's say the Cowboys are playing the Eagles, and we talked about Ezekiel Elliott. Let's say Ezekiel Elliott and Dak Prescott, 3 hours before the game, test positive for the coronavirus. If they're in Philadelphia, let's say it's an evenly matched game, that makes the Eagles probably -3 favorites at home. All of a sudden, if those guys are out, you could see the line jump maybe upwards of 4 or 5 points. So that's the value for the sharp bettors that got on that line early if they have that early information. But for the public, you know, the public's going to have to adjust on the fly as well. If they hear that Dallas's quarterback and running back are out, then they're immediately going to want to jump on the Eagles, and that's going to provide more liability. So I think you're going to see more sports books probably take a more conservative approach until they really feel like they have a better handle on this. But I know that they need the action right now, certainly with coronavirus playing a role there. That's taken away some of their opportunities to bet in person. But you're going to see more sports books really be careful on this, because the more inside information that starts to come in, that could be very damaging to their bottom line.
Yeah, that's a great point. And again, just so much uncertainty ahead of a season too for the NFL. If we're looking at, you know, that league specifically, there are already so many great things to look for just on the football field alone with the draft and some of the changes that were made and trades that happened during the offseason. And now you throw this into the mix as well. It's going to be absolutely insane. Ben, thank you so much for the time. Where can people find your work and follow along for more fantasy and gambling tips?
Yeah, I appreciate it, Allie. They can find me on the tweet machine at Benny Heiss. And you can also go to si.com/fantasy or si.com/gambling. We have probably upwards of 4 to 6 stories coming out every day. You know, some of our insiders on the fantasy side are some of the best fantasy players in the world. I would not put myself amongst them. That's why I have the privilege of working with them. You know, somebody like Sean Childs has been one of the high stakes winners in the fantasy football world championships the last several years. He has brilliant projections. So I love the fact that I can learn a little bit from him each day as well. And then some of our gambling information has been terrific as well. So there's plenty of content, SI Fantasy, SI Gambling. So yeah, Ellie, there's a ton of content that we have each and every day. It's always a lot of fun, especially with so much happening all at once. You have the NBA about to come back, same with the NHL. Major League Baseball in the full swing of things, hopefully. And then, of course, NFL is our bread and butter. So it's always a ton of fun, especially with so much happening all at once.
So there is my good friend, Ben Heisler of Sports Illustrated, SI Fantasy and SI Gambling, giving us all of the news, the analysis on fantasy football, which is going to be a very I'm excited for it, but it's going to be very interesting to see how everything plays out just with the new factor in all of this, and that is COVID-19. So we will see how everything works. But Blake and I were talking during, while that interview was airing, and talking about young quarterbacks up with talent around them.
Yeah, and what sparked this whole conversation is he was talking about Arizona being a sleeper team. And kind of coming in and probably being one of those teams that not everybody's really looking at, but the team that really could start making a spark in competing with a conference that's already got two powerhouses in San Francisco and Seattle. And that's really where we kind of got on this whole, our brain started working about, and Allie had brought up the good point about just young quarterbacks that have been getting supplied with ample amounts of talent around them. You look at a guy like Kyler Murray down in Arizona. Well, he had Larry Fitzgerald, who is probably 148 by now, but he's still one of the best wide receivers in the league and has been his entire career.
Literally indestructible somehow.
Yes,
so.
Yes. And that's no knock on Fitzgerald. He's just been in the league for a minute. Now, that's all, great, but you got to be able to have somebody other than just a 49-year-old wide receiver. So what they've done this offseason is they got rid of David Johnson, who was a really good running back. He's had some injuries the past couple of years. And they traded an old Chevy.
The most lopsided trade.
In the stupidest trade. Bill O'Brien, we can get into all that.
Oh,
but
my gosh.
I don't even want to harp on it because Billy O'Brien is an absolute stooge. But as far as making the trade of the offseason, in my opinion, getting rid of a B player for an A triple plus rated best wide receiver in the league. But, that's up for debate, but numbers really don't lie. He's got the most touchdowns in the league since he came in, DeAndre Hopkins. So now not only do you have a Larry Fitzgerald, but you also have a DeAndre Hopkins surrounding a guy who is the second year in the league and really can put together. I mean, when you have targets to throw to, it changes everything. And so what has the league been doing as far as quarterbacks?
Well, I just think when you look across the league right now, and again, when you talk about the Texans, unfortunately for Deshaun Watson, he can't really be totally included in this conversation because the Texans traded away his absolute best weapon in DeAndre Hopkins and gave him a running back, even though his talents are more in the passing game, and I just don't really understand why you would take away one of his top targets, one of his the team's best receivers. Whatever issues were going on in the locker room, I'm sorry, nothing that I read or heard from any of that seemed like a punishable offense in that you couldn't work those things out with one of your best players.
It didn't seem like a legit grievance, and I think I heard Bill O'Brien say
it sounded like Bill O'Brien covering his tracks for like why he just made such a bad move.
He was like, well, and this is one of the stories that I had read was about he had an issue with DeAndre Hopkins bringing his baby mama around, which I'm like, okay, was she causing drama, or you just didn't like her presence and I don't know. He didn't really elaborate, but I have never heard anything wrong with DeAndre Hopkins. He's never caused any issues as far as I know of. There's been no ill will spoken of, on him about, from players in the league. So it was a very head-scratching move. But we had touched on
Other young quarterbacks getting surrounded and loaded up with talent
with
around
good
them.
Talent.
Kyler Murray being one of them. You look at Drew Lock and all of the weapons that they were able to surround him with, including Albert O, the tight end who he played with at Mizzou, which might be kind of an underrated pairing there, like offensively. Obviously, the talk of the Broncos draft was more about them getting Jerry Judy and not as much about the other weapons. But like, if you look at Drew Lock's weapons now, I mean, if he can't make it work, there's going to be some questions as to whether or not he's going like that. I think that was a great move by the Broncos to load him up with as much talent as possible in the draft, the talent they already have on the field. Because let's look at the Broncos.
So they have not CeeDee Lamb. They have Jerry Judy. They've got Cortland Sutton.
Yep.
They already had Noah Fant from last year who's played as tight end. And they're bringing in Albert O, who has chemistry previously with Drew Lock. So he's got four guys right there who are all great pass catchers. And Noah Fant's a great blocker too. So he's got four guys that he can kind of go to now and they've really surrounded him. And believe it or not, you know, I actually trained with Drew Locke back in the day before he ever went to Mizzou when we were both still in high school. I am very excited for his career. It's unfortunate he got drafted to the Broncos, but
well, and then you also look, not even just at like the receiver, like Melvin Gordon and Philip yes. Lindsay. I mean, they've got a solid, and like those guys can are great in the passing game as well. I mean, they've got a really solid offense.
Yeah.
And if Drew Locke can make anything happen out of it, they're definitely going to be a dangerous team, and I think a good good competitor in the AFC West for the Chiefs. Now, do I by any means think that the Chiefs won't finish at the top of the AFC West and that the Broncos are anywhere close to dismantling the Chiefs? No, not by any stretch of the imagination. But they did everything that they needed to do to put their young quarterback in the best position possible to see, hey, is this going to be our future? Well, I also like what the Cowboys did in drafting CeeDee Lamb. And, you know, you've already got Amari Cooper and you've got Ezekiel Elliott. Dak Prescott, this is a prove-it year for him playing on the franchise tag. I think it's one of those crucial years for a player like Dak Prescott. And maybe not as much for Drew Locke because he doesn't have that same pressure of, you know, he's just playing on the franchise tag. That if he's not able to make anything work out of it, they might start having those discussions, or just depending on how the year goes. I mean, let's look at some other young quarterbacks, Mitchell Trubisky, Baker Mayfield, young guys who have not lived up to their expectations. And Baker Mayfield was also surrounded by talent.
Exactly. I was just
The Browns last year were like the team that was being talked about around preseason with all of the weapons that they had added in Odell Beckham Jr. and Kareem Hunt and
Jarvis Landry.
I mean, they really
and Joku.
Yeah. I mean, the thought was that the Browns are going to be a true contender.
Yeah.
Clearly ended up not being the case at all. But I think
instead they had somebody try to murder somebody on the field with a helmet. But, you know,
yes.
The things happen.
That seems like forever ago.
I know. It seems so long ago. But, yeah, so, you've seen a lot of these guys really, they've been pushing it. Instead of taking, you know, because this is an offense-driven league now.
But then the funniest part is that the Packers say, oh, no.
Oh, my God.
We're never actually going to draft a weapon ever for Aaron Rodgers.
Ever.
We're just going to draft his replacement. We're going to trade up to do it,
we're
too.
Like, I know that you were one game away from the Super Bowl last year, Aaron Rodgers, so what we really need to do is focus on 5 years from now.
And find our new quarterback.
We got run on for 165 yards down our throats, but we really need a quarterback because I don't know if you're going to cut it in this league. I'm like, it made no sense.
Made no sense.
And you know, Aaron, like if he was watching the draft, which you know he was, he just sat back. He probably had to turn his phone off.
No. I can tell you what he did because he did an interview with Kyle Brandt of NFL Network, and he literally said that he knew that he was about to get blown up, so he just turned his phone off and poured a stiff glass sipping tequila.
Four-finger tequila. If I'm not mistaken. He said, I poured four fingers worth of tequila and just sipped on that.
That's a lot of tequila.
I love tequila, but I'm like, I don't know if I just
I do too, but like sipping tequila, I don't know if I've ever heard of that in my life. Well, anyway, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we will play some clips from Mike Matheny's press conference after the Royals' close loss last night in their home opener against the White Sox. And then close out with a little bit of soccer talk. We'll be back after this. I'm Allie Trost. That's Blake Schneiders. And this is Sports Saturday. Welcome back to Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm Allie Trost. Blake Schneiders on the boards today. And I was just looking on Twitter. I literally forgot that Philip Rivers is with the Indianapolis Colts. Until like they tweeted a picture of him in his new uniform, which is probably like what the 10th least interesting or like 20th most interesting NFL news story that happened over the last few months with all the quarterback changes this season. I was like, oh, Philip Rivers is still playing. Right. I forgot.
Well, and what it was funny because when you were rattling off the Broncos players, I completely forgot because we have been swamped with news that Melvin Gordon.
I know.
Plays for the Broncos now.
I know. It's like. This NFL offseason, while maybe not as interesting in terms of like the trades, because there haven't been as many due to the pandemic and teams wanting to maybe not make as many moves as they would in a typical offseason, there were still a lot of interesting moves that were made. Like,
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Tom Brady headlining it, obviously, with his move to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but...
The NFL became an NBA-style, like, offseason over this offseason.
It was crazy.
Brady to the Bucs. Patrick breaks the bank. Literally every quarterback, there's a fun little quarterback carousel if you watch Bridgewater, Cam Newton, Tom Brady, and Jameis Winston. Because Winston goes from Tampa to New Orleans. Bridgewater went from New Orleans to the Panthers in Carolina. Cam Newton went from Carolina to freaking New England. And then New England's Tom went to Tampa. So it's just a carousel of everybody trading places.
Well, and now with the Patriots having, what is it now, 7 players opt out? 7?
There was 5. Has there been 2 more?
Maybe it is 5. Deadline is coming up August 4th. But still, 5 players opting out. Are they tanking?
Okay, I'm glad you said that because I wanted to cover this a little bit. I think so. I think if Bill Belichick's like, you know, because I don't know if they, you know, they signed Cam Newton. I just don't know. We've never had a quarterback of that caliber and that play style with Belichick, mainly because he's had Tom Brady for 100 years. So it will be interesting to see how they use him this season. But I also think because so many players have taken off, they're like, hey, we have a chance to snag Trevor Lawrence next year if we tank this whole season. And I think Belichick would rather, instead of trying to stick it to Brady, because I know there's been a long... People have always speculated they just don't like each other.
Yeah,
and
Belichick's
sure,
like, I don't need to be better than you this season. I just need to build my next dynasty.
Exactly.
I'll see you later.
Yeah, I'll see you later. I'll get another Tom Brady. So I think that that's what they're doing now. The players, I'm sure, would never tank on purpose. But
no.
You can definitely tank through a coaching perspective. You can call plays that wouldn't – I mean, the players are going to run the plays, but you can align players out of position based on the calls that you put in place. Now, the players have no – you know, they're not – so it'll be interesting.
This is all speculation.
This is all speculation, yes.
Weird.
This is Blake and Allie speaking. This is not
– Also, we're not the only ones. I've seen it all over Twitter.
Yeah.
Like, it's an interesting
– People have talked about
and
it.
And here's the thing. It's been Brady and Belichick for so long that – it's going to be analyzed in every way, shape, and form possible. So just thought we bring it up.
Just something to
chew on.
To titillate the mind for a little bit.
And also, just remember the name Philip Rivers because I completely forgot about
it. I didn't think I was going to wake up and say the word titillate today, but it just happened.
Here we are. Let's get into some Royals baseball. Chris Bubich, starting pitcher last night, started off a little shaky, got himself in a hole that he dug himself out of in the first inning, second inning. Not the best. Gave up a 3-run homer, which was all the White Sox needed to win that one last night. But all in all, I think very impressive to see Bubich be able to settle down and finish out the game strong. Or not, you know, the whole, but like, you know, after those moments, finish out.
Recollect himself, recapture himself, get himself in the mindset, and was able to not allow a run the rest of the game.
Right. And I think, like, there's something that can be said for the ability to do that. And here's what Mike Matheny said last night about Bubich's performance.
All right, everybody. Go, Rob.
Hey, Mike. Just tell us your thoughts on Bubich tonight.
Yeah, I thought he was good, Flanny. You know, he was obviously amped. We talked about trying to get him down in the zone, which he was having trouble doing. And he did a great job, though, of being able, especially there in the first. Now, he had some amazing defense behind him. That turn from Franco, the turn Nicky made second is going to be one of the best you see this year. But he kept attacking the zone, kept trusting his stuff, and then he just got better as he went. And we got him to about that limit that we knew we were going to be at. But, you know, you watch some of the guys in that lineup and watch some of the swings that they had against him, and it was all three pitches, whether it was the fastball, the breaking ball, and the changeup. I think you see why we're so excited about Chris Bubich, and I just thought he held his composure together really well, even without having really the kind of fastball command that he usually has.
So, yeah, confidence in Chris Bubich and some of these other young pitchers who have been getting their time on the mound for the Kansas City Royals. But the bullpen, much improved this season, which was a huge emphasis point in the offseason to really solidify a more solid bullpen after what we saw last season, which
was our biggest
basically the
season.
Achilles heel of the Kansas City Royals. And so the big part of that has been Greg Holland and Trevor Rosenthal. But let's just hear from Mike Matheny on the improved bullpen and what they've meant to the team so far.
Yeah, and I think we're going to be saying it all season. They just keep getting better, and we keep adding new pieces. Stamont came in today and picked up, and just right down the line was Zuber and Rosie, and Holly did a fantastic job as well. We had a couple chances today. That hasn't been the same story. We had some guys on base. We needed big two-out hits. Unfortunately, we didn't get them, and it's just a shame that the runs that we gave up early, even one of those not being earned, ended up being what got us. But you know what? These one-run games make teams better. And that sounds probably like a terrible thing to say when we keep ending up on the losing end of them. But watching how they play under pressure, watching how they respond in high leverage situations, we're gonna spin that number around if they keep playing the way that they're playing.
I'd believe that. I mean, I think at this point, you could still argue that the Royals will likely finish this 60-game season, if it even gets to 60 games, if it doesn't get canceled by next week, 25-35. I think that sounds reasonable. However, I mean, if they're 3-5 right now, which I think is perhaps better. And if you look at like what Matheny said, those one-run games, I mean, it's just a matter of one. That's been their last three losses. And so if they can turn that around, and again, you look at the bullpen last night, Tyler Zuber, Josh Stelmet, Trevor Rosenthal, and Greg Holland, they combined to toss 5 shutout innings, 4 strikeouts, and just 1 walk. I mean, the White Sox only scored in the second inning. For them to be able to close out the game in that way, now it's just a matter of offensively, they're just so close. And here's what Matheny had to say about that.
I've been saying that like every night, and it seems like we've got Nick Heath standing over there, and I'm almost having to pull him off the field. He's so ready to go, and just give us somebody on base so we can make something happen. But you start to see the at-bats, right? I mean, I'll go back to O'Hearn's again. Go back to some of the other ones that we're starting to see where guys get into those deep counts, and they just fight, and they fight. You can feel that just – one, it's wearing down an opposition, right? They had to get somebody else going in their pen after a 10 or 11 pitch at bat by O'Hearn. And it's going to wear on just about anybody. But we need a couple of those to go our way to where we can maybe put some pressure on with some speed and potentially steal base. But we got to get that mindset of next man up. I'm going to do my part getting on base. We're going to make some things happen.
So, yeah, there's Mike Matheny. They're close. They're close. I think that, you know, we're starting to see more out of Adalberto Mondesi at the plate, which was kind of rough there for him at the beginning. And you know, if they can just kind of put those final pieces together, Blake, I don't know if you've got any high expectations for the Royals. This has been touted as a rebuild year and even in a shortened 60-game season, which improved their chances to do well, but didn't necessarily make it a walk in the park for them to improve significantly. So what are you expecting to see?
Well, so I like how last season, we know that obviously we had a lot of one run games last season as well.
Mm-hmm.
Always, almost always, we were either up going into the 7th, 8th, and 9th, and our bullpen could not handle it.
Yeah.
So the fact that we rebuilt the bullpen, the fact that we brought back Greg Holland, a familiar face here in Kansas City, and honestly, last night he looked good.
And Rosenthal, familiar face from Matheny.
Exactly. So you've got some guys now to build around who can, hey, if we can get, because clearly they shut out the rest of the game. It was really just one at bat that cost us that game. So if we can hone in the early parts of the game and really keep being consistent in the closing end,
mm-hmm.
I do have good hopes, because the more one-run games you play in, the more competitive you feed off that competitive energy. If it's 14-6,
right?
Like we blew somebody out 14-6 the other day. I think it was the Astros, or no? We beat. I want to say it was the Astros the other day, 14-6, or maybe it was the Tigers.
I'm pulling up all of the results. But baseball plays too close together that the games
run together
a bit more.
But we you know, if you're going to have games like that and you're just getting swamped, there's no competitive drive at that point. You're just kind of like, all right, let's just get this game over, try to win the next game. But when you're in constant 1-2 run games, you're constantly on, you're constantly buzzing in between the ears, just going, okay, how can we dial this in? So it builds that competitive nature, and it really makes you hungry to get that run. You're like, dude, we're so close. So I like where we're at right now. I don't think we're going to go anything crazy, but I think we're going to be a lot closer to 500 than people think.
Yeah, that
way closer.
I think that's where I kind of stand right now, in that I think for the Royals, if they can get to 500, that to me is a success. One, when you consider all of the factors of the pandemic and how that's influenced not just the entire league, but decisions that have had to been made, players go, you know, having to quarantine for 2 weeks, being unavailable, coming back. I mean, the Royals had a good number of positive tests there during their summer camp, spring training 2.0 summer camp 2020. And so I think what we're seeing, and if these younger guys, especially the young pitchers, can start getting some valuable minutes and some real game opportunities that can help build their confidence and see what they've got, we could see a turnaround. And again, 500 to me, that's a win of a season. And who knows? It could actually improve depending on what other teams are dealing with. And as we've seen, you know, with the Cardinals and now the Marlins, you know, an outbreak within a team could change potentially what, you know, they have available to them. So we'll see what happens, but the Royals bounce back tonight, hopefully against the White Sox. And that game is at 6:05 p.m. So be sure to tune in. That will be on Fox Sports Kansas City. And we'll have some pregame coverage for you on Sports Radio 810 as well. And to finish out the show today, we're going to hit some soccer. Sporting Kansas City fell 3-1 to the Philadelphia Union, getting eliminated from the MLS's back tournament. And Peter Vermees, no minced words in his post-game press conference. Here's what he had to say after his team's disappointing loss.
I only have one thing when that happens. It's my fault. And so I can easily take blame, because if the team's not ready, it's my fault. So the team wasn't ready, and it is my fault. What I will say is, and I will say it this way, is that very, very seldom, as I've been coached at this club, have I've gone into a game with our team where they came out and they just weren't into the game. They didn't want to win, especially a knockout round when we've been in. I mean, we won plenty of open cups. We've been in playoff games, whatever. To come out and play the way we did in the first half, It was embarrassing. It was embarrassing, and so that's on me. And I can tell you this: I'm not sure why that is. The good thing is I have some time now to figure that out, and figuring that out is going to be at the expense of everyone else, meaning all the players in the team, because I can't sit through 90 minutes. Of the kind of game that we had today, even though I thought in the second half we tried to come back. But it's easy when you're down 2-0, 3-0. It's easy to now all of a sudden start to fight, and the other team takes the foot off the gas pedal. The psychological change in your mind is an easy one. It's what do you do when it's 0-0, and how do you play? And when it was 0-0, we fell very, very short of our quality. The positive is that we played three games in that meant something towards our season, and as of right now, we're still at least in the top of the West. But we need to get our act together, because we can't play games like that against teams in the West, because they're too good. They're too good, and they fight for everything. I said from the beginning, I thought that San Jose was, I think, the favorite. And their guys, they work. They work. They're the hardest working team in Major League Soccer at the moment, and they deserve to get the credit, and they deserve to be talked about because of the way that they go after the game, all the players in the team. We're not even in that class. We're not even close.
So there is Sporting Kansas City manager Peter Vermees very unhappy after his team conceded 3 goals in the first 15 minutes of the game against Philadelphia. Again, this game didn't count towards the regular season. It was just in the knockout round of the MLS's back tournament, but as Vermees said going into it, you know, they're going to compete in every game that they step out on the field for. And just a very disappointing showing from Sporting at every level of the game. And two attacking set pieces for Sporting in Philadelphia's half turned into counterattacks and then goals for Philadelphia. And that just simply cannot happen. Those are mental lapses. That's being unorganized. That's not being checked into the game. And when Vermees said in his press conference there that he now has time to think about it, literally sounded like an angry parent at their high schoolers that has time to think about it, and that will come at the expense of the players. The last time he said something somewhat similar to that was in 2018, right before Emiliano Amor was shipped off and let go and off the team. So I don't know if anything that drastic is going to come of this, but Vermees clearly not happy with the effort of his team. However, that game doesn't have any effect on their standings. They are still in first place in the Western Conference, have scored 13 goals, conceded just 5. I don't know what more you can ask for there, as Major League Soccer is looking for ways to get the regular season started. Per reports from The Athletic and conversations that I've had, they're rumored to be looking at an ideal start date of August 22nd. They will have travel included in this plan. So looking at Major League Baseball and some of the challenges that they're seeing, looking at ways to maybe combat those challenges with travel only within your conference and even maybe more regionalized than that. But they're looking to get 18 goals in or 18 games in before the playoffs. So I don't know if that's too lofty of a goal. I think 18 could work, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's more around the 13 to 15 range. It's just going to depend on how safe everyone can be within that time. And if, you know, nothing changes. Again, you look at baseball and how things have played out there. Major League Soccer is up against a bigger challenge than perhaps even the bubble was. Because while the bubble was hard to put together, once they were down there and once everything was rolling, it seems like it's gone pretty smoothly. And that's a huge credit to Major League Soccer and the teams, staff, players, everyone involved. I've been so impressed with the bubble makeup for NBA, MLS, WNBA, the NWSL. I mean, kudos to figuring all of that out, because it's a huge undertaking. I will now go enjoy my bubble in my apartment watching the FA Cup. Christian Pulisic opens up the scoring for Chelsea and a huge goal against Arsenal in the FA Cup today. Go turn on your TVs. Lots of sports to enjoy on this fine Saturday. We'll see you right back here next week. I'm Alec Trost. That's Blake Schneiders. And this is Sports Saturday.
Peace. It'll make you choke, you can't provoke, you can't cope, you should have broke, because I ain't no joke.